in, everyone, to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are joined by three amazing artists today who have a great show to share with us. Joining us, we have the playwright Sarah Graustra, the director Nadia Atkinson, and the production manager and production stage manager Agnes Scotti. They're joining us to talk about Fish Market Theatre Company's presentation of Insertion. It's playing April 18th through the 21st at the Connolly Theater upstairs, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting events.humanitix.com. We are so excited to be learning more and to be sharing this show with you. So the perfect people to do that is our guest. So let us welcome on Sarah, Nadia, and Agnes. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Woo! Thanks for having us.
I'm so happy all of you are here. I'm so happy you reached out with this show. The show sounds fantastic. So, Sarah, I want to start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about what Insertion is about?
Yeah, absolutely. So Insertion, I would describe it as kind of a coming-of-age comedy. It's about a college student who is working her dream unpaid internship at a publishing house, wants to be a writer, has dreamed of being a writer for her whole life. And her mentor for the summer is sort of this, you know, Margaret Atwood type, very intimidating, famous writer. But she finds out that this woman actually made all of her money writing erotic literature. And the reason why she has been accepted into this internship is because this writer wants to train a successor to write books in this sort of romance literature canon. And she's so, you know, in awe of this writer and intimidated, he doesn't want to tell her that she's a virgin. So instead of coming clean about that, she starts embarking on what I would call social experiments, trying to learn as much as she can about sex as possible in order to write a draft of this book. And it's sort of about, for me, this is about kind of coming of age as a bookworm, when you're sort of told that you can explore the whole world through books. And then all of a sudden you reach an age where you sort of have to go out into the world that you've always read about. And sometimes there are some gaps in your knowledge that you have to fulfill. So yeah, it's about that sort of experience. That's kind of the emotional heart of the play. But there's also some really wonderful, goofy stuff going on that is a lot of fun.
I love that. I absolutely love that. This is fabulous. So I have to know, Sarah, what was the inspiration behind the show? Where did you get the idea from?
Yeah, great question. I would say I was definitely that bookish kid growing up. And yeah, I think it was a little startling when I was like, oh, wait, I can't just live by reading. I have to live by doing. And I think there's always, you know, kind of a part of myself in the plays that I write. And that's definitely that part. But the sort of romance world was not a world I was super familiar with. And it actually, when I was in college and right before I started writing this play, I was writing a research paper for a gender studies class about the marketing of romance novels. And when I was doing the research for that, I was learning about how much money goes into that sector of the publishing industry, and how some of the most successful writers from kind of a purely financial standpoint are romance writers. But it's sort of this like underground thing, because they're not considered quote unquote like real literature. But some of these authors have just churned out like close to like 100 books, because they tend to be sort of formulaic. But, you know, then you have sort of the odd success stories of like, you know, E.L. James, who wrote 50 Shades of Grey. That was originally Twilight fan fiction that she then, you know, kind of marketed to a greater audience and became this like wildly successful and, you know, financially stable writer. And you kind of even see that now with the success of Bridgerton. Those were originally a kind of like erotic romance series that have now been turned into this sort of blockbuster TV show. There's also the new movie with Anne Hathaway and Nicholas Galzatine. That's based off of Harry Styles fan fiction. We're kind of seeing this really cool renaissance of romance novels sort of entering into the mainstream. So I feel like this play is kind of coming at the right time in that way.
That sounds amazing.
Thank you.
Nadia, I want to bring you in now, and I want to know, how did you come upon this fantastic piece?
Yeah, so I was directing a production of Franny Weed's Parking Lot Fairies at the Chain Theater One Act Festival last year. And Sarah and I both went to the classic small liberal arts college. And so our friend groups just slowly started intersecting. So I think the first time we met was actually at that show.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. And then Sarah kindly pulled me into a reading we had of the play at 938 Collective, which was a wonderful two to three rehearsal up on its feet celebratory night. And it was incredibly fun and wonderful. So I chatted with the cast after the reading, and there's just this intense urge and passion and desire to put it up on its feet. So we've just continued along with it.
That's wonderful. That is absolutely fantastic. I love that that's how you came upon this. Agnes, you're the third voice in this conversation.
Hi.
As the production manager and production stage manager, I want to know, I mean, we are just under 2 weeks at the time of this recording from the show going up. What has it been like developing the piece?
Oh, I mean, it's just been so fun. I think I've never had more fun in a rehearsal process. I was just telling Dadia last night. And I think one of the great things about this show is that I think when we think about books and we think about like book talk, a lot of our stories, they become kind of 2D because you have to imagine them in a lot of ways on your own. You have to make that kind of imaginary situation for yourself. But one of the great things about this show is that we're taking sort of a 2D reader experience that I think a lot of people, and specifically, I'm going to say like women right now, are having and experiencing at home, and we're putting it in a 3D scenario. And I think one of the great parts about developing the piece is that in the rehearsal process, it just almost felt like I've been reading the play over and over again in rehearsal. So I'm really excited to get into tech and actually put lights and sound and actually get to see it sort of really truly come to life. But yeah, it does sort of feel like the physical manifestation of like a romance novel, like on its feet, which obviously is what it is, but I really do keep thinking about that. And so I'm excited for it to sort of literally and figuratively jump out of the pages on stage. And we went to the space yesterday, and I was just like, tech is my favorite part of any process, obviously, as a stage manager. So I'm like so psyched. And I think we have so many little bits and fun things up our sleeves that are really going to take our audience on a ride. I'm trying to strap them in as much as I can.
Amazing. Amazing. Nadia, what about you as the director? What has it been like developing the piece and getting it up on its feet?
Yeah, so what I love about this piece is I'm usually very in the new play development world, but we are, because Insertion was already developed at the B Street Theater on the West Coast, the script has been completely frozen from the beginning. So we've just gotten to play with it, which is such a joy as a director, because I've been doing circus for a lot of my life, and I am based in physical theater. So getting a chance to work with a brilliant text and just build on it with really talented comedic performers is such a gift. So it's been a lot of inserting top hats into places you wouldn't expect, adding rose petals, breaking out into song. And so getting to use the text as another character in the room that we can bounce ideas off of and develop all of our really fun little bits with has been so fun. And the cast is really, really talented. So I'm excited for everyone to get to see what they come up with.
Amazing. Oh, this just gets better and better. I'm living for this. Sarah, I want to ask you, is there a message or a thought you hope that audiences take away from Insertion?
Yeah. Well, I feel like one of the most fascinating things for me as a playwright, and having, you know, different than say, you know, a piece of fiction or, you know, some kind of printed word, is that you really get to see the audience's reaction to a play, I think more so than many other art forms, because it is such a, it's an art form that's so reliant on that audience performer interaction. And so one of my favorite things is seeing all of the different responses that can come out of the same performance. And so I always hesitate to say that there's, one message or one takeaway, because I think that's sort of impossible. But I do just hope everyone has fun. I think that is something that we could use a lot more of in theater right now, is just, I think one of the strengths of this play is that it's entertainment with some heart as well. But most of the time, I just really hope people get a chance to, kind of let loose and laugh. But I think one of the most impactful things about comedy is that when you get people into that mindset where they can laugh at things, they also can identify with the characters in a way. And I think comedy is one of the most vulnerable art form, like genres out there in different art forms. And I think this is, I hope this play is cathartic for all of the bookworms and like Tumblr kids out there. And I hope it's the kind of play that just makes the audience feel like, I think often in New York, you're often playing to an audience of fellow artists. And I think this play really is about, one of the kind of messages of the play, I think, is that in order to make the art that means the most to you, you don't have to become someone you're not to become a good artist. And I think, yeah, in particular, I hope an audience of kind of fellow artists will feel invigorated by that message.
That is stupendous. I love that. Nadia, what about you? As the director, what is the message or thought you hope that audiences walk away from the show with?
Yeah, we've been chatting about this a bit during table work, and I think this is, I can come at it from my, personal perspective and experience, but when we talk about sexual empowerment, it's often defined as women being able to have a lot of sex, which for me isn't actually the whole conversation. It's about recalibrating what our needs are in those interactions. And there, you can't win with the societal narratives about how to interact with sex. Either you have a lot of it and you're empowered, or people shame you for that. You don't have it and you're a prude, or you're lauded for not having it. And so there aren't really, and because of course sexual education is awful in the US, there aren't many opportunities for women who have a more complicated relationship to sex to actually explore what it is and what their needs are before being thrown into completely off-kilter scenarios. And so we're not, it's shameful to talk about not feeling pleasure in a sexual encounter. It's shameful. There's so much, it feels like you have to accept having an active sexual lifestyle is kind of the only way to be a modern, feminist woman and whatnot in society. But there isn't any kind of conversation that we're having around, okay, well, what are those encounters like for people? And also talking about the disappointment that comes with that and what women's needs are, because there's almost this definition of, for instance, hookup culture feels incredibly masculine in a lot of ways. It is about still filling in the needs of the men that you're hooking up with. So for me, the show is such a wonderful conversation about what actually, what I love about it is that it's not about the actual act. It is about our relationship and grappling with what it means to be a person with a body and with needs, but also emotional needs, and this ability to actually define what that means for oneself and figure that out, because that's not a conversation that really, I think, ever happens in any kind of structured way, and that we kind of are just expected to figure out for ourselves.
Yeah, going off of that, I would say one of the things that I've loved about working on this play is that often in rehearsal rooms, people will start telling stories about when they lost their virginity and like their experiences with hookup culture. And I just love that working on this material and seeing characters who are empowered to talk about these things, it often makes the actors more comfortable to discuss these things with each other and with the production team. And yeah, I think it's been so wonderful to see this play be kind of that sort of jumping off point for these conversations.
And also, romance books is one of the only genres in literature that is dominated by women writers. So, and romance books are also one of the only genres, published genres, because fan fiction is a different thing that I could go off on a separate tangent about. But romance novels are the kind of only published genre in which women can redefine what a relationship looks like in a non-heteropatriarchal space. And part of the reason they're so popular is because we get to actually meet needs that we don't see otherwise. And there's a space, and a lot of the show is talking about that. The fantasy is so important because we don't have that met in any other genre.
Yeah, I want to jump off of that too. I think also, especially right now, I think within the last year, there's really just been like a big surge of romance novels sort of hitting the mainstream. I think if you go to any bookstore right now, there's a massive romance section where before I think you sort of, and I know this because I'm a chronic romance novel reader, which is sort of why I signed up to read do the play, is that it went from sort of like you scouring for these books and kind of being embarrassed by it and it being in these dark corners of the bookstores to this kind of like fully celebrated genre. And I think one of the reasons for that is that it actually is one of the most empowering genres because it's reminding women that not only should they deserve pleasure, do they deserve pleasure, but it's supposed to be received and you should be expecting it. And even though there is going to, it's never going to be like, might not be consistent, you shouldn't stop asking for what you want. And I think that's one of the most beautiful parts of the play is that something going off Sarah said earlier of, you don't need to sort of sacrifice who you are for your art. I think is similarly in sex, you shouldn't have to sacrifice your own pleasure just to pleasure someone else. And I think that's one of the things that's sort of like being discussed now that we have these romance novels that maybe take it to a level that doesn't exist to sort of bring it back down to a place of like, what is the reality? What can we meet? And I'm hoping that I think a lot of our audience members, because it's in the mainstream so significantly right now, are going to have gone and either have, maybe like secretly read 50 Shades of Grey, or are going to be like me and have read romance novels and sort of see them as this celebrated genre and will feel like, oh, this is very relatable. And this is I understand, I understand the message of this. So I'm really excited to see an audience. I'm a little nervous for my family to come, but my dad was like, what's the play about? And I was like, I'll just get you a ticket. Like it's a play, but otherwise I was also like, but you'll feel empowered. And he was like, why? And I was like, I don't know. Like I never
One of the craziest bits as well, telling people about this play has been several people I know either their parents or family members write romance novels under pseudonyms and refuse to tell them that what the pseudonym is. But it's such a common thing, and I didn't realize that before starting to work on this because it's such a, shameful, lowbrow, quote unquote, genre that people don't put their own name to it. But of course, there are plenty of highbrow canonical works that talk about intimacy, are incredibly raunchy, but it's because of who's writing it that it becomes separated into different levels of artistry.
I love all of that. Some wonderful ideas being thrown out and shared. So this is fabulous. Yes. Well, my final question for this first part, Agnes, I'm actually going to send your way, and that is, who do you hope have access to Insertion?
I think it's maybe too, I know it's not specific enough to say I hope everyone, but I do think that my goal, and I think Nadia and hopefully Sarah's goal too, as we, are ha having people buy tickets, is that we get a wide range of people coming. Because I think one of the great things about this show is that it's so relatable for like a certain section of people, which I know I talked about earlier, but I think it's also like very educational for another group of people. Specifically, like I made a joke about my dad. My dad, I know he's never read a romance novel, and if he has, I don't want to know. But like, I'm just saying, like, I hope that he comes to the show and is like, oh, you know, I've never thought of it. In my both for context, both of my parents are journalists, so you know, I've never talked to them about my exploration in that genre because it's weird to talk about with your family. But my point is that I hope that we get a wide range of age and demographic, because I think that the actual story behind, you know, the marketing thing that we're using of like comes to this like feisty show about romance novels is, you know, there is real heart and there is real relatable experience about sex and learning about sex. You just shared your story about growing up in Utah. You know, like sex is not always like fun and it's not always super straightforward. And I think that there's a lot of like education that is missing in our system, but also just like personally with each other, because it's a really awkward topic. And I'm really hoping that this play can sort of open some doors for all types of people, not just those who have been like, oh, I love, you know, I love Emily Henry, I love 50 Shades of Grey.
Could I add my very specific? So, seconding everything Agnes said about it's an incredibly accessible show for, I think, all ages of people. It's sure it's PG-13, but it's, I really think everyone will get a kick out of it and it will touch everyone coming in. But for me, at least, the people that I'm really hoping that the show reaches are all of the folks who had their first kiss at 19 or 20. And felt before that that something was wrong with them for not having it earlier, and this deep insecurity for sex being this really scary thing that they didn't know how to get into or anything about, and no one really helped them on that, and have felt this pressure but also fear around it. And it is for all of those people for me.
For the second part of our interview, we love to give our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better, pull the curtain back, if you will. And I know we are just a little short on time today, but I can't let all of you go without asking my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
I can go first to take the pressure off a little bit. So back in my college days, which were not that long ago, like oh so long ago. But I throughout, you know, when I was a kid, I got into theater kind of like quote unquote late. It wasn't until high school. I was an actor in the beginning. I like don't like super do that anymore, but in college I kind of like dabbled in everything a little bit. And I was in a production of a show through my college's student theater organization. It was called Five Lesbians Eating a Quiche, and it was like a farcical, you're nodding your head. Yeah, it's a fantastic show. Like a crazy show about five women trapped in a bomb shelter, a homemade bomb shelter in the 1950s, because like they're all afraid of communism. And they're having a quiche breakfast when basically like a nuclear bomb goes off and they're the last five people left on Earth. And it's a just incredibly like zany show. There's a lot of audience interaction, which I hate as an audience member, but love as a performer. And I played a character who, this I guess is kind of spoilers, but you know, you can read the play if you want. She runs out of the bomb shelter to rescue the quiche and explodes from radiation. And so we were doing this, I think. This is one of my favorite memories because it really kind of solidified my love for like scrappy DIY theater, which has always been, I find like I always have the best experiences when like it's all hands on deck. We're all like pouring all of our, you know, love and energy into this. And so, you know, one of the biggest questions in rehearsals was, how is Sarah going to blow up? And so what we did was basically for the last scene, I was on the other side of a door with a little window. And for the entire last scene, I had my hand in a on the other side of the door, my hand kind of off stage was in a bowl of Chef Boyardee. And when the cue went off, I ducked and at the same time flung my hand up and flung all the meatballs against the window. And I had to put on, like, without the audience seeing, I had, because I was wearing like a silk slip, and I had to put on like a splash zone like jacket, because we, had to reuse the costume every night. And one of the best nights, I can't remember, I hope this was in a show, but it might have been in a rehearsal, was when a meatball just like clearly like bounced off the window and rolled into the audience. And it was awesome. And it's just the most fun I've ever had working on a show. And I met some of my nearest and dearest friends laughing during rehearsals and all that stuff. So for many reasons, and for that stunt alone, that is one of my favorite theater memories.
I love that. That is wonderful. No shame about the meatball. It's just, an eye that just rolled out after the nuclear blast.
Exactly.
That is wonderful, though. Thank you so much for sharing that.
On the same vein, I decided as my first full production in college to direct Noises Off, uncut the full 3.5 hours. We had 3.5 weeks to put it up. It was about 5 hours of rehearsal a day, and this was an all-student group building the set, doing the acting. My college has a period over the winter where you have a month where you only take one class. So it was us in rehearsal every single day. And by the end of that, we had built this really deep intimacy and trust within the space, to the point that I remember standing off in the wings before a show, and we did the counting exercise. Everyone closes their eyes and you count 1, 2, 3, all the way as far as you can go. And if you repeat a number, you restart. We made it up to 120 as a cast. So that was one of my main moments of it was such a synchronicity and joy. And I think for me, directing is community organizing and community building. And it just felt like such a wonderful moment of we have inhabited the space and know each other so well that we can get to 120 without repeating. Yeah, it was magical.
Wow, that's amazing. I love that. Thank you. That's a great memory. Thank you. Agnes, bring us home. What's your favorite theater memory?
I mean, not to say, like, Nadia just gave the most, like, beautiful memory, and mine is, like, pretty horrific, so I'm really excited to share. So not to sandwich, but I went to an all-girls Catholic high school, and there was not a really deep, obviously, I don't know if you can tell, we didn't have a lot, like, a big theater program, but my junior year of high school, we did do You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And I decided to audition, and I ended up being cast in the huge role as Pigpen. However, we didn't know, similar to Sarah's story, we like didn't know how I was supposed to look so dirty all the time. Maybe it's just because I'm like chronically clean. I would hope that's the reason, but I think that we just didn't know how to figure it out with the lights and stuff. So every night I would just get doused in baby powder, like over and over and over again backstage, so that when I would leave, my hair was like white and it was just like trailing behind me, and it was really gross. So that's one of my favorite. But I do want to also give a shout out, so that one of the first shows I stage managed as a PSM was called Buried, and it was a musical that we did at Theater Row for the New York Musical Festival, and it was about two serial killers who go on dates to kill their dates, but end up accidentally going on a date with each other and falling very deeply in love. And it was like truly like it was one of the first experiences of being, I think often when you feel like as a PSM or like as a stage manager, when you're doing your life is tech, you don't want to often like broach the creative process too deeply, because you want to give that space, you want to give that, leave that curtain up per se. But this was one of the first experiences, and one of the things I'm hoping that we'll keep going into the theater community is that stage managers are just as creative as everyone else on the team. We all have ideas. We all played Pigpen in our high school production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. We all have ideas, and Yeah, it was one of the first experiences where I was like throwing out ideas because the director wanted me to, and like we was a very like workshoppy kind of group, and I felt really needed and admired and valued as a team member, so that when I was calling the show, it wasn't such a technical thing. It was, okay, like I'm about to tell this story. How what's my role? I did my own warm up. I'd be like, it was the first time that I created like a routine that I still use today. Like I make a playlist for every show that I do, and it's very, very specific. And I like listen to it before every show, and I do my own vocal warm up in the booth, even though no one will hear me, because I feel like I'm just as much of a character. I have to like, be the lights, be the sound. But yeah, and I feel I then for a while I went to like finished college, and you when you do college programs, they don't have that kind of experience. So this insertion, I think, is the first time since that show, which you can listen to on Spotify. It's a great show, that I feel that way. So I'm really, really grateful. By the way, it was a musical. It was buried as a musical. They probably do Play 11, that it was a musical, obviously. So I was just like, it was so wild. And it was like the musical was like really good music. And then it was just like, I'm gonna kill you now. And like, that was great. So yeah, I guess I sandwiched horrible experience with lovely thing to sort of tie things up, which is my job.
I love all that. Those are wonderful, wonderful memories. Thank you for those. Thank you all so much for those memories. Those are fabulous. As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do any of you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
Yes. Yeah. So Fish Market Theater Company is producing Insertion, and it's a small physical theater interdisciplinary collective. And we are doing a show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this summer called Cringe, or hashtag no beta, we die like men, which is a it is about the original fan fiction writers who were writing about Star Trek, who were housewives and women and exploring. Fan fiction is a space for queerness and queer world building. And it is again for all the people who were on Tumblr in 2010, going on AO3 and fanfic.net. And we're really excited to do it.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Well, for my final question, I would love to know if our listeners would like more information about Insertion or about any of you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
So our website is fishmarkettheater.com and our Instagram handle is at fishmarket.theater.com.co. And we also have a Twitter and other places you can find us, but the website is where you can get all of the most up-to-date information. We also have a newsletter you can subscribe to, a Substack, where we will release information about upcoming shows.
And then I have an Instagram at Agnes Scotti. You're welcome to follow me. I don't know.
And I'm on Instagram. My handle is Lady Poached Egg. And you can also find, I am like experimenting with Substack if you want to join and get updates about future shows and projects and all that good stuff.
Oh, I also have a WordPress. I'm also write short stories, so I have a WordPress. It's called I'd Like to Get Off This Ride, but it's linked in my Instagram bio, so you can look at it there.
Yeah, and I suppose on a personal note, my website has all of my contact information. It's just nadiaatkinson.com, Nadiya.
Perfect. Well, Sarah, Nadia, Agnes, thank you all so much for reaching out to us, for joining us on our show, sharing this amazing, amazing piece of theater you're creating, as well as some wonderful memories. This has been an absolute blast. So thank you all so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having
Thank
us. This
you.
was so
Thank
fun.
you.
My guests today have been the playwright Sarah Graustra, the director Nadia Atkinson, and the production manager and production stage manager Agnes Scotti, who all joined us to talk about Fish Market Theatre Company's presentation of Insertion. It's playing April 18th through the 21st at the Connolly Theatre upstairs. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting events.humanitics.com. We also have some wonderful contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you come out and support these great artists. April 18th through the 21st at the Connolly Theater upstairs, the show again is Insertion. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones,
unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.